Welcome to the Shift Spotlight Podcast. I'm Winter, your host and VP of Strategy at GCE Strategic Consulting. GCE are business transformational experts that provide fractional and executive leadership services that help business owners and CEOs shift from working in the business to working on the business. Our podcast was created to celebrate CEOs, visionaries, and the EOS community, all while promoting your business to our remarkable and influential network. We are excited to celebrate your stories of change, challenge, success, and shifts you've made happen along the way. The Shift Spotlight is always looking for podcast guests. Go to shiftspotlight.com to apply today. We'd love to have you. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Shift Spotlight. And today we have the pleasure of being here with Dan Yates. He is the CEO of Endeavor Bank. It's actually not what you're thinking. There's a twist to what you do. I'm going to let you get into that here in a minute. But he can be found on bankendeavor.com. So welcome to the show, Dan.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Okay, so before we dive into what you do and how you do it, let's start out with an interesting fact about you that people may not know.
Well, I would say most people know me as a bank CEO, but they may not know that I'm also an entrepreneur. I've started two banks from scratch. I'm also the chair of the Conrad Prebys Foundation, where we support a number of causes like medical research and the arts. But the funny factoid is I'm really an introvert, and that doesn't mean I'm shy. It just means I have to recharge by going inward, and it's really helped me become more thoughtful and centered as a leader. But most of my team are always surprised when I share that I'm an introvert because they don't see me that way.
Right. And that's a good one. And I think that a lot of people in these roles are, in fact, introverts. A lot of visionaries, I think, are, but they've got a great personality, so you would never know.
Absolutely.
Okay. So at a high level, tell us what it is that you do.
So we are a local business-focused bank here in Southern California. Our clients are companies with $5 to about $100 million in revenue. And we spend probably more of our time with clients thinking about strategy and solving the pressing issues that we all grapple with when we're trying to scale a company. Very little time talking about loans and treasury needs. I built another bank before this, Regions, and that was earlier in my career. But Endeavor's different because we're more intentional about culture. Like many of the people on this podcast, we utilize EOS. We're far more consultative in our approach. And we're largely owned, our shareholders are largely entrepreneurs themselves, and they helped us design this bank to serve fellow entrepreneurs. The other thing I would just share with you is I have a lifelong fascination with all things technology. You can tell by my white hair that I've been around for a while, and I can recall one of the first bankers to embrace computers, and then BlackBerries when they were one of the first smartphones. Later came cloud computing and paperless before anybody knew what that term was. Very early on into this whole area of mobile banking and not using a bank branch. And then right now, we're one of the few banks that have really embraced AI and workflow automation. So we are on a journey for all of our employees, trying to help them get comfortable with AI and protecting that important information and using it to be more efficient and profitable. So it's a journey we intend to share with our clients who themselves are trying to figure out how to jump into the AI game.
Interesting. Okay. So there's like so much I want to unpack in that statement there. So, I mean, first of all, BlackBerry, CrackBerry, right? Like when that thing hit the market, I mean, I had three or four of them. And honestly, I miss it.
Right.
I miss the CrackBerry. But interesting that you started Regions?
I did. That was back in 2001, literally on 9/11 of 2001 was our first day in business.
Oh, wow. So did you have anything to do with the fact that when Regions does like bank loans for mortgages that they don't sell their loans? Did you have anything to do with that?
A different bank. That was Regions and this was Regents.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Gotcha. Interesting. Okay. And so
a common mistake.
Yeah. So I know that you do business with a consultative model. So right. Like, what does that mean to you?
I joined a CEO peer group in early 2001 called Vistage. And I started to realize that business owners have so many pressing issues. that they really had no one to turn to but their peers in many cases. And I realized that banks can play a role, much like a CEO peer group, and looking at strategy, employee issues, exit issues, all the many things that we have in common, business owners, and trying to grow a company from scratch to exit. So we spend time doing whiteboarding, looking for identifying the issues, how to solve them, connecting our clients with solutions if we are not the solution, and maybe a third party, maybe an exit planning company. So if you want to do an ESOP, who's the best resource for that? You name it. Every client has an issue weekly, daily, throughout the years. And so we get together on a quarterly basis with our clients and their management teams and really focus on what are the issues that quarter they're trying to solve and how can we play a role. So it's really like having a seat on their management team.
And that's why I said you kind of do things a bit differently. This isn't just a, transactional relationship. You're a lot more involved with the people that you do business with, correct?
Yeah, it's really my personal passion. I would have left this industry years ago if it was a commodity. There's no fun in that. The joy for me is going through sometimes two different ownership teams when you have a succession and really helping companies navigate some of life's biggest challenges. And having done it myself more than once, I realize the pressure that's on a CEO when you're trying to scale a company. Sadly, our industry nationwide has not leaned into that as much as was the case decades ago. And we're trying to bring back to the relationship for the business owner what bankers historically were in a different time period, which is a key advisor, and not just in the areas of banking topics, but all aspects of growing and scaling a company.
Right. Okay, well, interesting. So we all know running a business is hard. That's why groups like Vistage and EO exist, right? Is that CEO is always looking for support in some way. And so we're going to talk about some of the mistakes you made along the way, but before we do, let's talk about something that you did right.
Most recently, I think the last 4 years is taking on the EOS framework. And I've led four banks in my career, two of which I started, but this is the first time I've actually utilized EOS, and it has made all the difference from how we scale the company, how we hire the right people, really just how we achieve our quarterly goals, our long-term vision. Having that accountability in a system is so different from the way I used to run businesses, sort of seat of the pants. So I'm a huge proponent of all things EOS.
So, are you self-implementing or do you have an implementer?
No, I always say friends don't let friends self-implement.
That's funny.
We started off with an implementer, and his role was to try and get us to the point where we would take on the role of self-implementing, but later in our journey. And that happened at about 3 years in. Now we just bring him in on a spot basis for some of the department teams when they're doing their L10s. But for the most part, we do our own quarterlies now in the annual meeting without a facilitator.
Gotcha. And then do you have an integrator or are you the integrator?
No, definitely not. I am the visionary, and the integrator has been a business partner of mine for decades. And we struggled for the first few years trying to really stay in our lane. But I would say right now it is working better than ever. Our integrator goes to an EOS conference annually. And this last year, he went to the master's class in Washington, D.C. And it was a life-changing moment for him. He came back and he said, "I finally understand what you need me to do as the integrator so that he can get into the weeds, do the execution." That's not to say that I don't occasionally get into problem-solving mode, but I spend more time in the visionary lane than ever before, and it is really helping our relationship, our company, and my personal happiness by staying more in the visionary role than the integrator role.
Good, good. So let's talk some team dynamics and culture. How many employees do you have?
85.
Wow. And so what strategies are you using to build strong and effective teams over such a large staff?
About 2 years ago, we leaned heavily into emotional intelligence habits, and we do a lot of book reports. We break it apart and really try to figure out how do we focus on and showing up for each other more so than just being accountable, but how we talk, how we communicate, how we make people feel. That was too touchy-feely for me in my early years until I realized how truly significant that is. And they say that emotional intelligence may be even more important than your IQ. And I would say for what we've discovered, that has been very true for us.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is such an overlooked aspect of the modern business world,
Right.
and it causes so many problems when it's not there. And it is such a simple thing, right? Is that to be aware and just notice these things. And the business world has changed. You know, you didn't have to have a lot of emotional intelligence back in the day. You,
No.
there was a mindset like, I'm your boss. I sign your checks. You're going to do what I need you to do. And now people have a lot more interest in the type of culture that they're building. That mindset doesn't work for a lot of employees anymore. Right now, the younger generation, they are willing to take culture over pay all day long. And
Yeah.
it's an interesting how this is shifting because it used to always be about the money.
Yeah, I think about my early CEOs that I reported to, and that's how they led with little or no emotional intelligence. So, of course, that's how I started my first role as a CEO. It served me okay. But when you adopt emotional intelligence, not just at the top, but throughout the company, what I found is I have employees that are more productive, more engaged, more willing to do what it takes to help us all be successful, and their work-life balance is significantly improved. So we all benefit from that. No one's getting burned out as we try to, achieve the next hill, the next goal.
So, how do you foster a strong company culture, especially during periods of growth?
Well, I already mentioned EOS, and it started with having the values. We use a lot of techniques. Like we have a program called Nectar, where we reward points to one another. Any employee can do this if you're caught living our values at a high level and really exceeding them. That really reinforces it. I think back to the pandemic, and it was a real test for us. We were only about a year and a half old when that PPP program was put on our doorstep by the government. We were working 20-hour days. If you may recall, that program was being redesigned daily. So we're trying to figure out the rules and apply it and getting very little sleep. And our clients were in a panic. Many of them expressed to us that if they didn't get that loan, they were going to be out of business. So we came together as a company, as a team, as a community. And I think it really set the tone for what we can do when called upon. And hopefully, we won't be called upon like that ever again. But that was a real test for an early company. And it's helped us throughout the years now leverage those lessons and apply them to more normalized times.
Yeah, it's so interesting how the pandemic, you know, you were working harder than ever. You were on overtime. There was a whole bunch of people not working, and business had slowed to a crawl, right? So it's interesting how that puts you in overdrive.
It was the most amazing social experiment too. We were forced to get comfortable with employees working remotely. We didn't have a choice. We brought in college students who were, quote, sequestered at home. We found out that although they had no prior banking experience, they were smart when it came to software. They could learn systems. Many of those college students that came in during that time period to help with the PPP program are still with us and in very senior leadership positions because they discovered the world of banking. We discovered that we didn't have to hire somebody with a resume that said, I've been in a bank role for many years. And it's changed how I think about transferring skills outside of banking into banking's career and really thinking differently about everything from remote work to how we use technology. When we're forced to. And for example, there were many individuals across the country that were resistant to mobile banking. And when bank branches were closed and you had to get your Your funds transferred, you learned to adopt technology and got through that uncomfortable period of time to where
Right.
today it's more normalized.
Right. It's interesting. So, as you've scaled your business, what challenges have taken you by surprise and how have you handled them?
I will tell you on a personal note, the toughest challenge for me was about a year and a half ago. I lost my son. He was 24.
I'm sorry.
And thank you. When you're dealing with a personal tragedy and you still have to lead your team, you have to reserve time to grieve and get through that period. But there's also moments when you have to show up. And hopefully nobody on this call will ever have to deal with that challenge, but it really helped me understand more how to deal with things that, life doesn't always prepare you for things that are unexpected. So that was my number one challenge. And I think today, all of us came together as a family to support our family going through that. So that's number one. Two, I would say the visionary integrator role for EOS is really stressed during times of high growth. And we've had high growth since day one. And trying to figure out how we could, my business partner and I could work together so that I didn't just jump in when there was a problem and try to fix it. I can, I'm good at it, but that's not what I enjoy doing 24 hours a day. So being patient, allowing my integrator to solve the problem, and focus on what I'm best suited to do, which is a lot of strategy work, working with our major shareholders, our clients, the regulators, of course. And by each of us staying in our respective seats, we together, I think, work better. The company operates better. We don't trip over one another. And that's just a smart lesson to learn as time goes on.
Hi there, this is Ken Paskins, the CEO of GCE Strategic Consulting. What's holding your company back? It's often blind spots in leadership, miscommunication, misaligned priorities, and untapped growth opportunities. GCE's 360 assessment provides crystal clear insights into your team's strengths and challenges. Then, one of our leaders will work with you to turn those insights into an action plan, ready to build a stronger, aligned team that can execute against your vision. Learn more about our 360 assessment today.
And I just want to dive into that a little bit more because it's a common problem I see. It's a common problem I speak to with a lot of CEOs is the shift starts to happen with something that needs to get done, and they
Right.
step in and they fix it, and then something else over here happens, and then the next thing you know, their hands are in everything. Everybody feels disempowered to do their job. They are unable to move forward without getting in contact, getting approval or whatever of the CEO, right? And then the CEO hits that burnout phase where they're like, why do I have to be involved in every facet of my business? Why did I even start this business? I don't even want to do this anymore. And so like how, like give me more tactical ways
Yeah,
how you stepped back.
we were doing our one-on-one check-in meetings very infrequently, maybe once a month, usually when there was a problem. Now, integrator and myself, we meet frequently, at least a couple times a week, sometimes more. We talk about what's important to me, what do I think he should be focused on, things that he knows I need to know. And just by checking in, and really pointing him in the right direction, maybe repositioning his priorities, giving him some suggestions. He can then fully execute, and I have an opportunity to offload what's on my mind, how I might attack that problem. But instead of taking it all the way around the bases, I'm just getting him pointed to first base. Could he do that without me? Of course, but it certainly helps when you have that one-on-one check-in. And let's just make sure we're on the same page and we both have the same understanding of what our top priorities need to be this week, this month, this quarter. That is really the biggest change is having more of those, making time for our relationship and our discussion and our check-in.
So how important do you think it is to stay open to feedback as a leader, right? Because I'm sure during those conversations, some of those things are coming out.
Yeah, when you say that, I think first and foremost of vulnerability, candor. That is so important, not just for me, but for everyone on the team. I'm an open book. I accept feedback, criticism. I certainly give it out too, but we have very open conversations, fierce conversations, and we do that back to the emotional intelligence without causing poor feelings. When we have our quarterly EOS meetings, I'm sure you've experienced this, where what's working, what's not working, what do you need us to stop doing, start doing? Those are all examples of really being authentic with one another and not letting your personal ego get in the way of really showing up and making sure we hold each other accountable.
Right, right. So as a leader, how do you maintain work-life balance while you're leading the company?
Last year was the first year I say I really aced it. I told my board that I was going to take more time off and not check in. I took a month off to go to Europe. I'll do that again in September this year. And scheduling more clarity breaks, more time away from the company, which you can only do when you let go of the vine and have people you trust that can take care of the business. Yeah. And surprisingly, the bank was still here when I came back. And more than that, the employees, the team, the exec team, and all the way down to, you know, tellers will say, I think we're excited that they knew they ran their respective divisions and took care of their responsibilities without me being around to check in and fix things. And so yeah. I think we both grew by my absence from the company.
Well, that's when you know it's working.
That's what they say. I just was never brave enough to test it.
So shifting gears a little bit, how do you ensure your company stays relevant in such a rapidly changing industry?
You know, we are growing so fast, and unfortunately in our industry, community banks are becoming dinosaurs. And what we find is we are more relevant today than at any time in history. That's what's fueling the growth. There's never been a time in my career where the role that a large, too big to fail bank versus a community bank shows up. I think the world saw it during PPP.
Because the big banks were not there, and the big banks were impossible to get hold of. And you had to know somebody of somebody if you didn't have a relationship with a community bank.
Yeah, it was a proud moment for the community banking space. But I think it also, we built upon that. It really helped us understand what we need to do as an industry to really add value to entrepreneurs. And that's where this whole consultative culture comes from. Doesn't matter what changes in different industries, business owners will always have issues. And if you can be a source of solution for them, you will be relevant. Certainly, we think about fintech. We think about technology. Obviously, we're doing our part by getting involved with AI. But as much as we invest heavily in technology, that's not what keeps us relevant. That is essential. But yes, the relevancy is solving problems for our clients so they can scale, they can steer their path towards a profitable operation. And if they are unfortunate enough to be in a situation where they have supply chain issues, maybe they're losing money, being part of the team that helps right the ship is more gratifying to me than only banking the most successful companies, because there are more companies that need help with their business issues, their financial challenges, their business challenges than anything else. And that is the gift that keeps giving, because that's what we shine in doing.
And I want to touch on your board. You have a pretty impressive advisory board. I'm sure you have a lot of experience. How did you go about picking them? What advice would you give? Because, you know, a lot of these CEOs, they actually don't know the first place to start with that.
Yeah, no, I would say we're fortunate because we have over 1,000 shareholders that are business owners. They'd all like to be part of the advisory board. Nice. We're very selective. And frankly, we invited some off. They weren't a great fit. And we put those...
Invited some off.
Some off.
Very, yeah. Very lovely way to say it.
Yes. And it was very, you know, well done, but they understood what we were looking for. What we were looking for were advisory board members that could help our clients with strategic issues. So we do like strike team presentations where clients, if they choose to, can come in, meet with the board, talk about what they're dealing with, and they're surrounded by peers that will listen, ask clarifying questions, offer suggestions. They can implement those if they choose to. It's not a long mentoring process, but rather a one-time event. Mm-hmm. A quick example, we had a client that was struggling with constant turnover of employees.
Yeah.
As a result, they couldn't take on business. And there was a very simple solution staring everyone in the eyes but our client. And that is, they weren't paying enough to attract quality employees. They viewed doing so as taking money out of their pocket. And so when the suggestion came up to double, triple the pay of these key employees, the first reaction was rejection. They came back a year later to tell us, the advisor board, they did that. Top line grew by fourfold. Their personal income grew because the top line grew. They had almost no turnover because they were now recruiting a higher caliber employee and paying them appropriately so. But what it really shows you is sometimes when you're too close to your company, you don't think about things that other entrepreneurs may look at. It says, this seems like a simple solution. I always offer that because that's an easy one to share. But many times the issues that come before advisory board are far more complex. But that's one that just seemed like what I would call a no-brainer. But without that meeting and that discussion, I'm not sure they would have ever discovered it.
Right. Awesome. I love that. So where do you see yourself investing resources for growth over the next year?
Yeah, banks have to constantly raise capital if you want to grow indefinitely. We set a goal to hit $1 billion in assets by year 10. So you roughly need, if you're at $1 billion in assets, about $100 million in capital. And we're on track to do most of that capital through profitability. But we may do a capital raise the next year or two. And then once we hit $1 billion in assets, there's no reason to stop. That's just a waypoint. We'll continue that journey on. It typically takes less time for a bank to get to the second billion and the third because you have the flywheel effect. So as you build, you're constantly looking at focusing on how do you build that middle level of management, working on succession planning because I don't want to do this forever.
Right.
And you're trying to make sure you preserve a culture while you build the bank. And particularly that's challenging when most bankers we hire don't come from an environment of being consultative. So right. We have to put them through a pretty lengthy orientation. Mm-hmm. So they learn how to apply the skills they have in a consultative manner. I would say on average, it takes about 2 years for bankers to really hone it well, but then they pay that forward and they teach the next team member that we bring on. So it's not all on my shoulders to, you know, carry that culture forward.
Right.
I said it, but we have many people that are helping to drive it. And that's really what we work on significantly.
Wow. I mean, you've got a lot going on there.
Thank you.
So if you had to do it all over, speaking to a younger self, a less experienced self, what would your advice be?
Oh, I would do this all over again. I would probably, if this was my first bank, I would have used EOS. I didn't know it even existed then. That's the easy one.
Curious, how did you come across EOS?
Funny story, my business partner introduced it to me and I looked it over and I said, you know, I've led banks, we don't need that. And he said, well, it's not for you, it's for us. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you're a visionary and you're always throwing strategies at us and we're trying to please you, make you happy, and we're overwhelmed. And what I saw in the early description of EOS was we would prioritize all those projects either into short-term rocks or they would go into the long-term needs area. And if they became a rock, I could rest assured they were going to have an end date of 90 days. Mm-hmm. And if not, I knew that sooner or later, we would take them out of long-term needs and we'd put them into practice. And it allowed me to prioritize things. Like I think you've heard the expression, if everything's important, nothing is.
Yeah.
That really woke me up to how I was leading in the past, where I was making everything important.
Yep.
And now it's a more organized, structured way of running a business that I just didn't recognize was absent in those early periods of my CEO journey.
Yeah. I mean, you've got some great one-liners. I've written a few of them down. friends don't let friends self-implement
right.
POS. It's if it's not for you, it's for us. And if everything is important, nothing is. I mean, those are, you got some great one-liners there.
Thank you.
Okay, final question. Well, two more left. What's one book or resource besides EOS that, and besides the Shift Spotlight podcast, that you would recommend to another CEO?
There's a couple on my desk right now. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, Atomic Habits, and maybe throw in a third, Emotional Intelligence Habits. Those are the three that I keep on my desk all the time.
Full loop, full circle. Yeah. And if somebody listening with you wanted to take the next step with you, what should they do?
Just reach out. My cell phone is on our website, so I'm always reachable 24/7.
Wow. A CEO's cell phone on the website. That's amazing. Really, really good. All right, Dan. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciated having you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Shift Spotlight podcast. If you are a business owner, CEO, founder, visionary, or of the EOS community seeking recognition for your exceptional expertise while gaining exposure through our remarkable network, we are actively searching for podcast guests who can bring their inspiring stories to light, and we'd love to showcase your journey. Please visit shiftspotlight.com to apply today. And if you are a listener, I'd love to give a shout out to your business to our whole audience for free. All you have to do is leave a review on Apple Podcasts or follow our newsletter on LinkedIn by searching GCE Strategic Consulting. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. We believe that every person has a message that can positively impact the world. We love our community who listens and shares our program, so hit subscribe to be inspired and motivated. I promise to bring positivity and inspiration to you and your growing business. We will see you next time.